You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. A year ago, we featured a program entitled Patent Law 101, featuring two attorneys who have been supporters of the program for some time, both the program itself and the Call a Lawyer feature. Tonight, we return to that discussion. A frequent participant in both Your Legal Rights and our Call a Lawyer feature is attorney, pilot, arbitrator, and patent-holding inventor Ron Rohde of Palo Alto. Joining Ron in the studio is Myrna Schelling, senior counsel at Carr & Farrell, LLP in Menlo Park. Myrna's practice is concentrated in the preparation, prosecution of patents, and litigation. If you have questions for my guests, our phone address right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're calling from outside of San Francisco, our toll-free number is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Occasionally, I neglect to mention that while we're happy to answer all of your questions, we stop short of giving precise legal advice, as we don't have all the facts relating to a given case, or for this matter, your given invention. But we're more than happy to pass along the legal principles that guide your decision-making. And as always, you can call regarding any question on the topic of intellectual property, particularly as it relates to patents. You're not limited to the point we may be in our conversation. And again, our toll-free number is 866-798-8255. But before we begin, I'm pleased to announce the return of Call a Lawyer Night, available for your queries. Practicing tax law, real estate law, from Pacifica, we have CPA, attorney, real estate broker, Frank Adam. Janet Brewer of Palo Alto is certified as a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law by the California Board of Legal Specialization, State Bar of California. For family law, collection defense, San Francisco attorney Nathaniel Bigger is there for your calls. And San Francisco attorney Jessica Chilek practices landlord-tenant law and is there to answer your questions. If there was ever an area in flux, between the lack of affordable housing in the Bay Area and the specter of rent control spanning the entire state, there's a lot going on. There's a lot to talk about. Next week, Jessica will return as we will have a program featuring landlord-tenant law. If you have questions for Call a Lawyer that do not put you on the air, the number is 800-525-9917. And again, that's 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. But for tonight, our topic will be your patents and intellectual property. And again, tonight I'm happy to welcome attorneys Ron Rohde and Myrna Schelling. Myrna, Ron, let me welcome each of you to Your Legal Rights.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You know, before we go further, I'd like to start with this. You know, I've got this great idea. Wait, can I talk about it? When is it ever safe for me to talk about it? Or can I protect myself and my idea?
Well, you can talk about it. And the question is whether or not you want to publicly disclose it. Because as soon as you publicly disclose your great idea, a time clock starts that you have to file a patent application, and other things could happen. But you can talk to people about it as long as it's not a public disclosure. And there are ways to make sure that it's not a public disclosure. One of the easiest ways is to talk to somebody who's under an obligation not to tell anybody about your invention. It could be a contractual obligation that you have because you have what's called a non-disclosure agreement between you and the other person or a company. Or it could be a coworker who has an obligation not to disclose something that because of their employment agreement or something like that. But it has to be somebody who has an obligation not to disclose. That makes it a non-public disclosure, and it preserves a lot of your rights for that.
And non-disclosure agreements, sometimes you might want to think about having them be in place when you're talking to potential vendors, such as manufacturers. Sometimes people don't even think about that. I have an idea for a product. I need certain parts to be made for it. Perhaps you need a non-disclosure agreement to talk to those potential manufacturers who could be helping you to produce that product.
Now, I think we all have a sense of what a non-disclosure agreement is. We may not know what it looks like, but we know it when we see it. I mean, ultimately, the words are there. We kind of know what that's talking about. But let's circle back to the view from 10,000 feet. You're saying until you actually file a patent application or maybe go out and get a patent, but just what is a patent? What does it protect? And, you know, why should we care?
A patent application is something that you receive from the U.S. government, and it gives you the right to exclude others from making and using your invention. It's as simple as that. It's a right that you actually that actually comes from the U.S. Constitution. It's one of those very few things that's enshrined in the Constitution. So that in its simplest sense is what a patent is: the right to exclude others from making or using your invention.
And to be clear, if you get a patent from the U.S. Patent Office, you get protection within the boundaries of the U.S. So if, for instance, you had an idea that you might even want to go overseas with, that's a different – you'd have to get patent applications outside of the U.S. But Ron is right. The U.S. patent allows you to have that type of monopoly on your invention. And in terms of – seeing what a patent looks like, if you've not looked at one lately, it has a really nice, beautiful red ribbon when it's issued out, and it has all your figures, and it has a description, a written description, and claims. And those claims are the most important portion of the patent because it really sets forth the meets and bounds of your invention.
Oh, and it has your name in there, too.
So
you can show it to all your friends and say, looky here, what has my name on it, and the federal government put my name there.
I understand that you hold one yourself, Frank. Ron, did you want to tell us about that? I'm looking through the window at Frank. Ron, did you want to tell us a little bit about your patent?
Well, I have been issued a patent as a co-inventor on an invention. It was a little bit esoteric, having to do with energy management, but it's long since expired. So this is the other thing about patents. Your right to exclude others is temporary. It's for a limited period of time. Right now, that period of time is for 20 years from the date of first application. Or if it's a design patent, it's 14 years from date of application. Or is it date of issue? I forget.
It's date of.
I'm looking at Myrna now, and she's nodding. So.
So anyway, regarding the term, it's typically 20 years from the date of when you filed it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we all hear about patents and trademarks and that sort of thing. We hear about copyrights, and this is kind of the world of intellectual property. But to people listening, what's the difference in a patent or a copyright or a trademark? Not necessarily the mechanics, but what are they for?
Okay. There's a fundamental difference that most people don't really recognize between patents and all the rest of those things you mentioned. And that is, in order to obtain a patent, you have to apply to the U.S. Government, U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, and they examine your application, and finally they grant you a patent. A trademark, a copyright, come into existence when you first do something. That's called a common law trademark or a common law copyright. When you first send products into interstate commerce, you have a common law trademark. When you first take that photograph or sing a song that nobody's heard before, you have a common law copyright. What you do then is you register your copyright or you register your trademark, and that serves as notice to the entire world, if not the universe, that you do have that trademark or copyright.
I have to go back to that thing about patents, though, and inventions. Some of my clients often ask me, do I need to have something in writing, or do I need to have something as a prototype? And To be clear, all you have to have is a really good idea of how to make and use the product. So you do not need to have a prototype of the product. You don't need to have any of that tangible evidence of your invention.
So if you're talking about a trademark, there's a common law trademark that takes effect until you really prosecute a trademark more directly or apply for one.
What you apply for is a trademark registration. That's
correct.
You apply for the right to give notice to everybody that you have this trademark. But you have that trademark as soon as you send products into interstate commerce with your mark on the products.
And the same as you described, that similar would be true of a copyright if I sent a photograph or...
No, if you take the photograph, you have the copyright, and you register the copyright with the Library of Congress, not the Patent and Trademark Office, but the Library of Congress. And again, that gives notice to everybody that you have registered your copyright. And since you own, and what the copyright gives you is the right to, again, to exclude others from making copies of that product. And a trademark gives you the right to exclude others from marking their products with your trademark.
And, of course, another example you gave was singing a song. But before I lose all of our listeners by doing that, let me turn it over to Roy in San Francisco. Roy, you're on Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I have a question. I have a patent I would like to go to the public domain after I die, but California has a lien on my estate because of all my Medicaid and Medi-Cal. And I wondered, is there any way I can ensure that it goes to the public domain, and so no one tries to profit off it or restrict it, you know, after I die?
Well, it will automatically go into the public domain if you fail to pay your maintenance fees, or after 20 years after the date that you first applied for it. So when did you first apply for the patent?
I don't remember. I think it was about 2 or 3 years ago.
Okay. Has it already issued?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So that was a very quick patent. So say it was 3 years ago, 17 years from now, it will automatically be in the public domain whether you want it to be or not. And it doesn't matter what the state of California says about that. It's federal government, and they trump the state, so to speak.
So California really can't take it or do anything. So I could just, in my will, provide, you know, they say you can put it, pay like $100 and with a filling out a form, and it put it in the public domain anytime. So I could do that with my will, I guess.
No, you don't have to do that. You can put it in the public domain. There's actually a form, I think, with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office where you can what is that called, Myrna?
It's basically relinquishing your rights.
Yeah, you can file a form with the Patent and Trademark Office to give up your rights in the patent. Or just if you've had it for 3 years and another half a year, you'll have to start paying a maintenance fee. If you don't pay the maintenance fee, it will expire.
You know, I hate to go like future interest and old school stuff on you guys, but if Roy wanted to, is there a way that he could surrender it to surrender his patent to the, you know, to the public, reserving a life estate so it stays his exclusively until the moment he passes, and then it goes to the public?
Well, once it's in the public domain, it's in the public domain.
Right, and can he save it for his own use, maintain its exclusivity, and have some type of a springing document that when he passes, it goes to the public domain, and up until that very moment, it's exclusively his?
That's what I would like.
I got that sense.
That sounds like wills and trusts to me. I stick to patents.
You know, actually, there may be a vehicle, and in the other room, who is not on the air tonight, is Janet Brewer, who is...
Oh, she had no idea. I called her first. Yeah.
It's a great question.
It really is. And my suspicion is we would probably need to get, maybe if Janet were in here and we had everybody in the same room and comparing notes, we might have 2 or 3 minutes for the rest of the show, but that might be the way to get there.
Okay, well, I don't want to take up your whole show, but thank you.
No, thank you for joining us, Roy. You posed a very interesting question, and you stumped the panel.
Yeah, too bad. Okay, but...
There is a vehicle, I'm sure, and I'm sure we could do some follow-through for you. If you want to follow through, drop me...
I'm wondering if perhaps you could put something in the will that says the executor has the power of attorney to present your relinquishment of your patent rights upon your death.
Essentially, that's an assignment.
Yeah.
You could make an assignment.
That's what I was thinking.
And record the assignment. Now, which brings up an interesting question. Can you record a future assignment?
Well, that's why I was saying the executrix could be empowered to do that upon death.
Yeah, or alternatively, maybe you could assign it to your trust.
Exactly.
And now we're back to Janet.
Okay, give Janet another call and ask her about assigning your patent to your trust.
Okay, thank you.
All righty, thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights, Roy. Tonight, you're listening to Your Legal Rights, and I'm pleased to announce the return of Call a Lawyer Night. We're available for your queries tonight without placing you on the radio. Practicing tax law, real estate law. From Pacifica, we have CPA, attorney, real estate broker, Frank Adam. And for family law, collections defense, from San Francisco, we have Nathaniel Bigger. And Nate Bigger is also here for your calls. San Francisco attorney Jessica Chilek practices landlord-tenant law and is there to answer your questions. And as we said a moment ago, that law is very much in flux. Should be a very interesting conversation to have with her. I intend to continue that conversation here on the air next week as Jessica and Sal Timpano will be joining me and we'll be discussing landlord-tenant law, some of the changes that are coming up. It's going to affect landlord-tenant. It's going to affect zoning. We may have the specter of statewide rent control taking effect. There'll be a lot to talk about there. And lastly, as you just heard, we have Janet Ruhr from Palo Alto, who is certified as a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law by the California Board of Legal Specialization, State Bar of California, available for your calls. And if you have questions for Call a Lawyer, the number that will not place you on the radio with us is 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. But tonight, our topic on the air is patents and intellectual property with Ron Rohde and Myrna Schelling. And we've been talking a little bit about what patents are and what patents aren't and what they protect. I guess the other side of this is how do I not only protect my patent, but how do I protect myself from getting sued? I mean, the real question is, you know, how do I know if I'm really going where no person has gone before? What can I do there to make sure that I'm not traveling into interstellar space that's blocked out by somebody's patent or perhaps a treaty or something? What can I do? What should I do before I move forward?
Great question. You might want to consider contacting a patent attorney and asking for a search to be done on what's out there, a prior art search. And basically, the patent attorney will look through certain databases and see if he or she can find what we call prior art references, or in other words, publications of technology that are closest to your invention. Also, if you're one already in the industry, you probably have seen much of what's out there. Perhaps you might know what is the closest art in from a trade show that you attended. During the process of patent prosecution, you have to disclose to the patent office, as an inventor, anything that you know that is the closest to your invention. So any prior art disclosure that you've known about, let's say that you went to a trade show and you saw something that was somewhat close to your invention, but not entirely it, you'd have to disclose that to the patent office, and that's part of the inventor's duty of candor. So going back to the original question, you might want to ask a patent attorney to do what is called a patent search, a prior art patent search, to see what's out there.
Or you may want to do what's called also a freedom to operate search, which is kind of the next level up. And that's where you find a search specialist who specializes in freedom to operate searches to go out and find out if there is a valid patent out there which would read on your idea, your invention. These are a little bit more involved. You could go directly to somebody who does a search. Probably be better off talking with a patent attorney to advise you as to what this search means to you and what the patents and sort of interpret the patent for you and explain to you why it, whether or not you're likely to infringe. But more importantly, you would want what's called a freedom to operate letter or a non-infringement letter that would protect you in case at some point this person does come along and say, you're infringing my patent. You may end up being found in infringing, but at least an opinion letter from an attorney will protect you from what's called willful infringement, which is getting a little bit beyond probably the scope of your question, but these are various different levels of protection. The first thing to do, as Myrna said, though, is you're probably, if you're an inventor, you're probably in that space and you know who's out there and what's out there. And to a certain extent, sometimes applying for a patent will tell you what is out there. And the examiner will definitely do a search for you, and you can take a look at some of the art that the examiner finds and see if it's likely that you're infringing that art.
Are these things that I could do myself if I wanted to look up and see if somebody's come up with my idea for the electric motor that's going to run my car for 10 years? Is that something that I could find easily?
Yes. You can start with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. They have a search engine there. It's a little primitive by some standards, but it's there. There's also Google patent searches. Both of these are usable by the average person.
And also, you might want to consider putting perhaps in a paragraph form what your invention is, and that way then when you're looking at your search, you make sure to have those key words in your search. So from time to time, you might want to look at your paragraph and just make sure, okay, I've got the invention, I've got my my idea set forth. All I have to do now is do the appropriate keyword searches. The problem is that, as you can imagine, the Patent Office database has all these patents, so you might find a lot of patents. That's the reason why a good keyword search is important.
So I would imagine a patent search, the idea behind it would be a lot like trying to get yourself on the first page of Google. There's only so many combinations of words that people are going to really look for, so you want to make sure they find you.
Exactly. And you might want to also look. You might want to look by the particular classes. So, patents are actually set forth in certain classes, and once you identify the class, so for instance, they have a specific one for certain software. You can look in that certain class and limit your search to a certain class in the patent database, and that way, then it's not so horrendous of a search. Otherwise, you will have a huge Google search.
Yeah. And there are manuals that will show you how to classify your invention. And you can take a look at these manuals, figure out what class your invention is likely to be in, class, subclass, and so on, and then start with those classes.
And I should point out that it's not just simply patents that you should search, but also published patent applications, because those are also considered prior art references. So those are at least two databases on the Patent Office website.
So we're getting close to the end of the first half hour, and in a moment I'll flip back. I want to look at this a little differently. I've come up with an idea. Maybe it's original. Maybe it's not. At this point, I'm really not sure. But I want to protect the idea. I want to protect my income and my assets in case I'm wrong on that. But I also want to know, how can I make sure that I can get whatever I can out of this idea before 15 people from various parts of the world start copying it and dumping it on the market. So what I'd like to be thinking about in the next few minutes is, where do I start? You've got this idea. You're kind of thinking about it. You've been working on it for a while. And maybe it's not so far removed from where people are thinking, but you think you might be onto something. Now, if this was a storyline or a book, I would have an idea how to do it. But with stuff, with things, with tangible working devices or tangible products, it's a little different for most of us to kind of gather exactly how to approach that and what our rights are. And I guess where I'd like to come back after the break at the end of the half hour is, where do I start? And let you guys walk me through it. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden, and tonight is Call a Lawyer Night. Available to help you with your queries is Frank Adam from Pacifica, who is not only an attorney, but also a CPA and a real estate broker. From Palo Alto, Janet Brewer is certified as a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. Nathaniel Bigger practices family law and collection defense and Prius defense, but only he and I know what that means, from San Francisco, and he's here to take your calls. Jessica Chilek practices landlord-tenant law, is not only frequently doing Call a Lawyer with us every week, but is also a frequent guest on the program. We'll be back next week as we talk about the specter of statewide rent control, zoning being controlled at a statewide level or regional level instead of by the city, some of the changes that are happening because of the rental market in the Bay Area. Very interesting topic that's in store for next week. But for now, if you have questions for Call a Lawyer, and again, these are the questions that will not place you on the air, you can call them toll-free at 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. But for tonight, our topic is going to be intellectual property and specifically patents. We're happy to take your calls about any of these areas. You're not locked into where we are in our conversation. But we're about to resume and start from the beginning. Just what should I do? Very first thing. And again, we're returning with Ron Rohde and Myrna Schilling, who are here to tell us exactly how to start, really where to get started from the very first step. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're calling from outside of San Francisco, you can call us toll-free. Our toll-free number where we pay the freight is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. You're listening to Your Legal Rights, and we'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
So we're back, and I think I posed my question to each of you before we left. Where do I go first?
Well, first, you don't necessarily need a patent. For example, the whole point of a patent is, the whole point of a patent is to exclude others from making using your invention. But if you make your invention bigger, better, faster than anybody else, they can't compete with you anyway. So why would you need a patent for that? If you want to, you can go and talk to people, as we discussed earlier, under a non-disclosure agreement that puts them under an obligation not to steal your invention from you, among other things, and not to tell other people about your invention. And it may be that they would like to license it from you just license the idea. And believe it or not, there are companies that will license an idea that has not been patented just because it's a good idea and it's been brought to them. And that could be a subject for a whole another discussion. But there are people that specialize in working out those things.
So the classic example of licensing an idea, or basically getting a non-exclusive license that lets you do something even though you don't own it, would be something like Microsoft brought to IBM when the PC first came out, saying, we'll give you this operating system. You can use it. It's not all yours, but you can use it. And suddenly everybody else has to go to them to get it, to get on board.
Something like that, or it might be something that has a very limited lifetime. By the time you obtained a patent, it might be obsolete, and you wouldn't want to wouldn't need a patent anyway. So, again, get to market first before anybody else. That's one way to protect your invention. Make it bigger, better, faster. Get somebody to manufacture it for you. Talk to somebody about maybe obtaining a patent for you. If they like your idea well enough under a non-disclosure agreement, they may spend money and do all your patenting for you. So these are some things you can do before you ever get into the, shall I get a patent mode. You described something where somebody has a good idea, they're not sure if it'll go. Well, very probably over the next year or two, they're going to be solving lots of problems. Problem solutions are generally inventions and can be patented. So what you may want to do is file what's called a provisional patent application, which is good for 1 year, protects your idea for 1 year. And during that year, you can go out and experiment. And if you find a solution to a problem, you file yet another provisional patent application and you do some more work and solve another problem, file another provisional. But at the end of 1 year, you sweep all of those provisional patent applications into what's called a non-provisional patent application, or what we would say is the application that will result in a patent, and file that, claiming priority back to that first date that all those of those provisional patent applications. So you now have 1 year that you've been working on it. You haven't spent anything more than $150 or $125 to file the provisional patent application. And you have a certain amount of protection depending on how good the provisional patent application is.
That's right. And once you've filed your provisional patent application, you could actually say to your potential investors or potential clients, I'm actually patent pending. So the minute that you file a patent application, whether it's provisional or non-provisional, you are indeed patent pending the minute you get that serial number from the patent office. And that gives some sense of confidence, particularly for investors who are thinking about or potential licensees of your technology that, hey, I might actually be investing in something that's already been protected some ways. And then we're going to perfect that that protection by filing a non-provisional patent application. And a non-provisional patent application is usually when a patent attorney gets involved and they draft a patent application that will hopefully describe your patent, how to make and use your invention, your patent application in such a way that one skilled in the art, That's the phrase that they use, someone in the industry basically, could understand it just by reading it and would know how to make and use your product. And that's the goal, is to try to get that U.S. non-provisional patent application on file if you want to go down that route.
If I have something that may be novel but probably not worth a whole lot, are there a lot of times I would want to blow it out quickly, not bother with a patent, just get in, get out, take my money and run?
Oh, definitely.
Absolutely.
Because if it's not worth a whole lot and if it's going to be obsolete before you even get a patent, why bother?
So the people that think of those toys or those little gimmicks that people carry around for $2 or $3 each probably don't want to bother with a patent if they think that someone else is going to be knocking at the door real quick.
Well, unless they want to say patent pending and put it on their product in order to impress people that it might be a good product.
Correct.
Seems to me, I remember from when I was a child, the inventor patent pending. But as we muse over that, let me turn it to Jamie in Oakland. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for joining us.
have a sister who has been going to a psychiatrist for 30 years, and she has bipolar disorder, and she's taking medication, and now she's suing me for $1 million because, and my sister, we were both the executor of my mom's will, and it's, you know, it wasn't even, the state wasn't even worth $1 million, really, and she's getting away with it. I mean, I've put out this year alone over $20,000 on this case, and I'm just wondering if there's anything to stop her from doing such a thing.
I think perhaps the best thing would be for you to call the estate planning attorney in the next room.
Is there something that involves intellectual property or a patent or a trademark or anything like that involved in the estate?
No.
This is more of a generalized estate question?
Yes.
You probably want to dial in the next room that won't put you on the air. We have a certified specialist in trust and estate, that's estate planning, trust and probate law by the California Board of Legal Specialization, who is ready to answer your call. If you can call her at that number, which is 800-525-9917. Unfortunately, there's no way for me to transfer the call to them or have them transfer it here.
I'm sorry. I just came in on the program a little late. I didn't know. But thank you so much.
No, my pleasure. I hope that we're able to help you from there.
Okay, great. I'm sure you will. Have a great day.
Thank you, and you as well. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So we were talking about Pat Pending. That was the inventor from Wacky Races. But you want to say that the patent is pending. When do I want to simply ignore that stuff entirely? Maybe the $1 toy, I came up with the idea of these two little balls with casting resin and a string between them, and you could make them bang into each other really fast and hope they don't explode and take someone's eye out. Is that one where I don't want to necessarily do that because I want to get in, get out? Or
toys are a great place that, you know, if they're really small and it's going to be a limited shelf life, yes, definitely. Probably. If you were to get a patent, you might want to consider at best a design patent, but that's really a tough field.
And there are a lot of people who actually do come up with toy ideas. They go to various different toy companies and they say, I'll sell you this idea I'll license it to you for $10,000. It's a quick money. There's not a lot involved. The toy company says we'll pay you $10,000 if it looks good and if we go to market with it, and otherwise not. For the most part, most companies are honorable and they will honor their commitments. Otherwise, we couldn't do any business. Of course, there are exceptions, but like people, most companies will treat people honestly.
And when they don't, we can elect them to public office. So I've started down that road. I have decided to see about whether somebody's doing it or whether it's mine to do or whether it's worth patenting. What's the next step I want to do? Walk me through the process. I've invented this thing that will make the cars run for a long, long time for next to nothing.
That depends a lot on what you want to do with your invention. Do you want to go into business manufacturing the invention, or do you want to simply sell a license to somebody else? And that's probably a threshold decision that you have to make to begin with. Most people are not the sort who would go into business making something or go over to China and start manufacturing. There are people who do that. But for the average person who just has an idea, they make a prototype in their garage or maybe they just have the idea, they can obtain a patent on that idea with or without a prototype, and they can license that patent to somebody who would like to make it if it's economically viable. So I'm not sure whether your question has to do with somebody who wants to get into the business of making their own product or wants to talk somebody else into buying a license from them.
And it sounds like the dividing line isn't that a particular product would push me one or the other on that. It's really a question of who I am and what I want to do with it.
Exactly.
Yeah, who's your audience?
So me, I'm an ideas guy, so I might want to really try to sell the idea and move on to the next one, whereas somebody else might say, hey, this is my life's work. I want to keep making these widgets or air conditioners or maybe...
Or if you're a startup. And we see a lot of startups. I think Myrna sees a lot more than I do, who come in with an idea and they want patents as part of their business portfolio. And I'll let you talk to that.
When startups come in, typically they have actually more than one idea. But what we do is we talk to them about all of their ideas, and we try to see, okay, is there just one patent involved here, or is there more than one patent? Because obviously, if you're thinking about licensing technology, it'd be best to identify all of your inventions early on. Try to figure out, okay, can I actually provide a patent portfolio to a potential licensee that might be more profitable than, say, just one-off patent? So we usually have a discussion with the inventors and try to identify all their inventions and come up with a strategy of how we are going to file these. If we're going to file it as a one provisional patent application, if we're going to file it as a multitude of non-provisional patent applications and start prosecution. So typically the factors that you have to consider are not only your budget, but also, you know, the time. Are you trying to get something so that you're trying to get out some patents so that you have revenue in 2 or 3 years? Are you looking at this longer term? If you're just a serial entrepreneur, then obviously you're going to want to file a variety of patent applications to try to get a string of revenue from that with various licensees.
One of the factors is I want to start making money today. What gives me the ability to do that fairly quickly?
Well, that's when you go into a company that makes a product such as what you want to make, and you say to them, here's my idea, it's worth a lot, here's my provisional patent application or my non-provisional patent application, so it's been protected, and this has value. How would you like to license this from me? So that's about the only way I know of where you can start making money from that today is when if somebody's willing to buy it from you today. Alternatively, you go into you start manufacturing the product, and depending on how quickly you get into production, you can and how quickly you can get talk a company into putting it on their shelves or sell it through eBay or something like that, or Amazon, you can start making money from that.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight, I'm pleased to announce, is Call a Lawyer Night. One, okay. We have lawyers available for your questions, whether it's in tax law, real estate law. From Pacifica, we have an attorney, CPA, real estate broker, Frank Adam. If your questions involve trust and estates, Janet Brewer from Palo Alto is a certified specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization, State Bar of California, practicing family law and collection defense. Nathaniel Bigger of San Francisco, there for your calls. And Jessica Chalik out of San Francisco practices landlord-tenant law and is there to answer your questions. If you would like to speak with a lawyer and not be placed on the air, call us toll-free at 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. For tonight on the radio, our topic is patents and intellectual property. I'm happy to welcome back attorneys Myrna Schelling and Ron Rohde. And we were talking about when do I want to patent. Maybe patenting a better phone system so the calls make it through here would be a good start. I see they're kind of bottlenecked. But give me an example of when I would really how do I know this is worth patenting? This is worth waiting a year or two or three to get a patent before I blow it out as opposed to something where I should just go straight out. Is there something that would tell me?
Well, I think we've mentioned, first of all, if someone is already in the industry, you would probably already know what's out there in terms of what is the closest, in a trade show that you've seen to your invention. The other thing that you might want to consider is doing that search that Ron talked about earlier. You could do a patentability search, hire a patent attorney to do that, or you could do the search yourself and see if there's something out there that's close or relatively in the same sphere as your invention. And then that will kind of educate you a little bit more about what's out there in terms of patents or products out there. You should know that anyway going into a market if you're planning on selling a product, knowing what your competition is, and that way then if you can identify, hey, my product is actually superior because it has these features, then that's when you know. That's when you know, Jeff, that you should be filing a patent application.
Okay, we've been talking about what I do. I've got this idea. I haven't started it yet. What are my first steps? Where do I go? Or maybe I shouldn't go. Let's say I've had this idea. I've got this invention. I've been using it. I've built a successful business. And I get this letter in the mail. I've been doing this for a few years now. And somebody says, hey, you're violating my patent. And this patent is held by a company. And it says, or I'm violating their patent that's held by somebody who says, hey, clean it up or you're gonna have to pay us $5 million. We're going to take you to a lawsuit right now. If you don't pay us to settle, we're going after the big bucks. What do I do?
This is what's known as a cease and desist letter. You have a couple of choices here. You can ignore them, and they might go away. Sometimes they do. You can file what's called a declaratory relief. You'll need to talk to an attorney about that. So the nice thing about ignoring them is you don't have to talk to an attorney at all about that. It's free.
And while we're on that bent, I think John wants to talk to an attorney. John in San Francisco, Yard Your Legal Rights.
Hi there, John O'Connell. And so I have a product that I'm working on that relates to generation through wind power. And I have two questions. One is, from the get-go to the point where I would actually have it patented, assuming that it's all works well, best of all worlds, what would it cost? And then the second question is, in this device, there are two parts, one of which catches the wind, one of which generates the electricity. So we haven't been able to connect it to the generator and see how efficient it is yet. But is the first part of it that catches the wind that we already have, is that patentable by itself, even though it doesn't produce anything?
Okay, I'll answer your second question first. The answer is yes, that would be patentable as long as it's unique, non-obvious. It would be patentable. And as long as you can tell somebody how to make and use the invention. Whether or not it's economically feasible, that's not part of the patent office's concern. They just want to know if it's unique and non-obvious, and if your disclosure tells a person having ordinary skill in the art how to make and use the invention, or to put it another way, how to steal your invention from you without you there to explain it to them. So that would apply to your the wind portion. The you say it was the battery or the conversion of the energy, which is the second part. That would probably be a second patent. Now you can apply for a patent on that as long as you've conceived of what it is you think will work, even if you haven't built a prototype or haven't tested it. As long as you have the idea and you have some faith that it will be viable, you can apply for a patent application, and the patent application can issue, again, if it's unique, non-obvious, and if your disclosure enables it. It may turn out that it's not economically viable, or it doesn't work very well, or it doesn't work well enough to make it worth selling, or it might turn out it works very well and everybody wants to be a path to your door. Either way, you can file the application and prosecute the application until it issues. In terms of your question was, how much does it cost? That depends a lot on the type of technology, how crowded the technology is, how much is in your patent application. But the cost can run anywhere from $5,000 to $50,000. And it also depends on what's called prosecution. So filing an application doesn't get you a patent. It just gets you in the door. What happens next, and that'll be our next program perhaps, Patents 102, is that the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office examines the patent, and then they issue what are called office actions, which you then have to deal with in order to have your patent application allowed. So that can go very quickly and very inexpensively, or it can add up to quite a bit of money, and it all depends a lot, again, on the nature of the technology.
Okay. Well, that's helpful. It gives me a ballpark, and it at least answers the other part about the pieces of the project, so I know when it's time to go forward.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you all very much. Really appreciate your show.
You're welcome. Thank you, John. Thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. Let me turn it over to Mason in Oakland. You're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. So I have there's a company that I buy stuff, like products from. And I started using their products in a completely different way, and it kind of inspired something that I would like to do myself. And I'm wondering what sort of ramifications are there, or what can I do, even though it might look like a particular product, but is being used in a different way and has additional features.
First of all, if you're buying the product from them, then there's no patent issue because it's the doctrine of patent extinction, and that is once you buy a product, it's yours to do with as you please. You can do anything you want with it.
Okay, so if I wanted to like take this idea and then make my own product building off of this idea.
Right. So known pieces of art, such as what you're talking about, like if you get something off the shelf, if you add and combine them in a way that's non-obvious, then you can still file a patent application on that. In other words, let's say that the parts that you purchased off the shelf, they were intended for a bicycle, and you came up with a totally different idea for it, a different product altogether for it, and it was not obvious, and it was not done already, then you can certainly file a patent application on that and potentially get a patent on that. What do you think, Ron?
That's true. Now, the question then is, are any of those products patented? Again, as long as you buy those products from off the shelf, you can use them any way you want. The real question then is, your question was, you want to start making them yourself. If those products are patented, then you'll need a license from the inventors on their products. So, but you, as Myrna said, you can still obtain a patent on your own invention if it's an improvement over, even if it's an improvement over somebody else's patent, you can obtain a patent on your improvement. It doesn't give you a right to infringe their patent, but it also, they could not infringe your patent. So it's kind of a tricky esoteric area of law.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Mason, thank you for joining us. We have about a minute or so left. Let me turn it to Matthew in Oakland, but we do have to go rather quickly.
All right, guys. Then I'll make it real quick. So I'm asking from actually a consumer standpoint. So I work in an industry with a lot of dangerous machines that can chop your fingers off, and there's been competing devices for a specific kind of machine to stop your fingers from being chopped off. But there's this one company that's been successfully preventing a bunch of other foreign competitors from bringing their products to the American market because of intellectual property stuff and lawsuits, but I want those products because I like their features more than the ones I can find here. Is there anything I can do to get around this marketing, or is I'm just going to have to wait for patents to expire?
Are you saying that the products are only patented in the foreign jurisdictions, or are they also patented in the U.S.?
I think they're patented here, too. But okay. I don't know how they're keeping them out of the market.
Yeah. So the thing is, first of all, you'd probably have to find those patents and just make sure that you've identified which ones they are and see if indeed they've – whether or not they've paid the maintenance fees. They might not even be in effect. I don't know when you say that they've made sure that the marketing aspect is taken care of. But I would definitely check the status of the patents if you think that there are patents in the U.S. for the products that you're concerned about.
Okay. That sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Matt, thanks for joining us in your legal rights. And I'd like to give each of you about a minute, but we're actually really tight on that, so just under a minute each, if there's any closing thoughts you have.
I don't have any closing thoughts.
I just encourage everybody that if you do have an idea and you're thinking about filing a patent application, just do your own due diligence, so to speak. Look out what is out there already in the market, and then perhaps chat with a patent attorney and see if there's something there.
And always practice defensively, whether or not you're protecting your own. At least make sure you're not stepping on somebody else's. Avoid the problems.
Correct.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Our topic tonight has been Patent Law 101A. My guests tonight have been attorney, pilot arbitrator, and patent-holding inventor Ron Rohde of Palo Alto, and Myrna Schelling, senior counsel at Carr & Farrell LLP in Menlo Park. I'd like to thank you both for joining us. And those lawyers answering your calls off the air in an almost complete anonymity, Frank Adam of Pacifica, Nathaniel Bigger and Jessica Chalik of San Francisco, and Janet Brewer of Palo Alto. Thank you. Thank you, one and all. We'll be back next week with Your Legal Rights, where we'll be discussing the evolution of landlord-tenant law. We see major changes coming across California. Let's talk about them and get them out. That's next week with Jessica Chalik and Sal Timpano. Again, you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 in San Francisco. Our thanks to you for listening, to our production assistant, Martin McLean, and at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Have a good night.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.